for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Federal agents arrest four more men for being serial rioters at last year's white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. Republican Corey Stewart and Democrat Tim Kaine meet in Richmond for their final debate. And hemp is poised for a comeback in Virginia. Maybe. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, October 3rd.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from the shops at Stonefield at Route 29 and Hydraulic Road in Charlottesville, featuring a collection of shopping, dining, and entertainment experiences with parking available. Learn more at shopsatstonefield.com.
Four California men described as serial rioters are facing federal charges related to last year's white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. Prosecutors say they flew across the country for the rally and violently attacked counter-protesters. Federal agents arrested the men Tuesday. Prosecutors identified them as members of the Rise Above movement, a militant white supremacist group they said espouses anti-Semitic and other racist views and meets regularly to train in boxing and other fighting techniques. U.S. Attorney Thomas Cullen says that each defendant faces up to 10 years in prison if convicted on the two counts they each face, traveling to incite riots and conspiracy to riot. A federal appeals court has vacated a permit to build the Mountain Valley Pipeline yet again through waterways in a district overseen by the Army Corps of Engineers. The ruling by the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals revokes the pipeline's authority to build through waterways in the Corps' Huntington District. The decision, announced Tuesday in a news release from the Sierra Club, follows arguments made to a three-judge panel of the court by attorneys for the club and other environmental groups. According to the news release, because the pipeline's certificate from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission specifies that all necessary permits must be in place before the project can proceed, MVP must also halt work along its entire route. That route would run from West Virginia through Southwest Virginia near Roanoke. Republican Corey Stewart and Democrat Tim Kaine met in Richmond Tuesday night for their final debate before Virginia voters choose who to represent them in the Senate. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain has more.
Kaine says his campaign has been upbeat and forward-looking. Still, it didn't take him long to attack opponent Corey Stewart.
Harsh attacks on immigrant communities, championing the causes of white supremacists and other extreme individuals.
Stewart also came out swinging. He consistently used his time not to answer questions, but to accuse Kaine of getting nothing done during his 4 years as governor and 6 years as senator.
He's against everything that President Trump and the Republicans proposes. Why? Because he's bitter about 2016. That's why he opposes everything. I get things done.
Stewart serves on Prince William County's Board of Supervisors, where he says they've cut spending but increased employee salaries. For his part, Kaine says he's accomplished plenty in the Senate, including 17 pieces of legislation that President Trump has signed. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopain.
Governor Ralph Northam says he will veto a GOP-drawn map aimed at fixing an unconstitutional racial gerrymander. Northam said Tuesday the GOP-led General Assembly's redrawing effort is too partisan and that a federal court is best situated to draw a new legislative map. A House committee voted along party lines last week to advance a GOP-drawn map that supporters say does not unfairly advantage either major political party. Opponents said the map is unfair to African-American voters. A federal court ruled in June that lawmakers illegally packed black voters into 11 districts, and it ordered lawmakers to draw a new map by October 30th. The opioid crisis has touched every corner and demographic of Virginia. Ralph Northam is using his roles both as governor and as a pediatric neurologist to talk about it. Virginia Public Radio's David Seidel reports.
Good morning.
Governor Ralph Northam brought plenty of stats and state programs to the Virginia Tech Carilion School of Medicine, but he also brought personal stories from his own experience as a physician.
I've heard this story over and over again, and this path of addiction often starts with a prescription from someone like me.
That's exactly what happened to Ryan Hall after he broke his leg in a high school football game. Prescription pills led to heroin and treatment for a near-fatal overdose.
I've had the Narcan one time. I believe I've overdosed more times than that, but just didn't realize it.
the son of a county sheriff, Hall joined Northam in the classroom and told students he's now a year sober, though it took an 18-month jail sentence and treatment to get there. Northam stressed the importance of following up with patients and weaning them off painkillers when they're needed.
Whether you're taking care of someone like Ryan or an autistic child, they come to you not so much for a diagnosis, but they come to you because they want your help.
And the worst thing a doctor could do, Northam says, is let a patient walk out the door without any hope. In Roanoke, I'm David Seidel.
Four recently freed men gathered at the University of Virginia Tuesday night to give thanks to the school's chapter of the Innocence Project. From partner station WCVE, Hawes Spencer reports.
Music executive turned podcaster Jason Flom said he'd match up to $50,000 in donations to the Innocence Project.
Well, the Innocence Project at UVA has an incredible reputation.
The group helped free Darnell Phillips from jail just 1 week ago.
28 years.
He expressed gratitude to the Innocence Project.
They're just like family to me, right? I see them as nothing other than family who have law degrees and, and help me get out.
The four men honored Tuesday served a combined 92 years in jail for crimes they may not have committed. In Charlottesville, Hawes Spencer, WMRA News.
Education advocates are asking parents, community members, and teachers across the state to wear red for Ed, Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain reports.
The Red for Ed campaign began in Arizona, where a grassroots movement led to a raise in teacher pay and increased funding for public education.
It was so inspiring to see teachers and parents and communities stand together.
Sarah Peterson is a teacher in Richmond and an organizer with Virginia Educators United.
We really have been working very hard to try to ensure that the General Assembly is aware that Virginia could be next.
Part of the campaign is encouraging people across the state to wear red each Wednesday, then share their support for public education by using the Red for Ed hashtag on social media.
We want everyone to understand that education isn't a sunk cost, it's an investment. And we're asking our leaders, our electeds, to understand that just as we stand together on Wednesdays, we will stand together at the ballot box.
So far, the movement is strongest in Richmond, but organizers in Shenandoah, Northern Virginia, and Roanoke have also been on board. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopain.
And finally today, the story from Tuesday. For the first time in decades, a new state law makes it legal to buy and process industrial hemp in Virginia. One company in the Shenandoah Valley hopes to be the first to do just that. WMRA's Andrew Jenner reports.
At the Mount Jackson Industrial Park, just off I-81, a white pickup pulls into a lonely parking lot beside a vacant warehouse that looks like a giant metal shoebox. At the wheel is a guy with big plans for all 40,000 square feet of it.
My name is Sam Grant. I'm the managing partner of Virginia Hemp Company. Virginia Hemp is in the process of buying this building to open the first hemp manufacturing facility in the state of Virginia.
At least in the modern era. As collateral damage in the drug war, industrial hemp hasn't been grown commercially in the country for decades. State and federal law has been changing quickly, though, as policymakers recognize that while industrial hemp won't get you high, it will do a lot of other stuff.
We will then, in this facility, process the stalks of that into high-quality hemp fiber for use in a range of things, including high-quality clothing.
That process also yields a valuable byproduct known as HURD, spelled H-U-R-D.
It's a very absorbent material. We have been test marketing some in Virginia as horse bedding, chicken bedding, put it in a cage with your guinea pig.
Industrial hemp has applications in the automotive industry, home building, biofuels, pharmaceuticals, foods, and all sorts of other stuff.
And with somewhere in the order of 40 to 50,000 different products that can be made from the hemp plant, the opportunities are quite limitless.
In 2015, the Virginia legislature created a pilot program to study industrial hemp production. Glenn Rhodes, a farmer in Rockingham County, was the very first licensed to participate.
We had been growing crops for biodiesel, and there was lots of information around that hemp was this crop that would also provide biofuel if we could grow it.
Working with researchers at James Madison University, his basic goal was to see if hemp could be grown here with conventional farming equipment.
We used our grain drill and our combine. We wanted to plant a big enough crop to make it worth getting out the equipment to do it, but a small enough crop that if it was a failure, it wouldn't be a disaster.
He's grown about 10 acres, disaster-free, for each of the past 3 years.
It's been a really good experience. I'm excited about it, and I think it will be an opportunity when the market opens up.
That's where the Virginia Hemp Company comes in. Thanks to new state law that took effect this summer, it can now buy and process hemp grown by farmers such as Rhodes. It says hemp can be far more lucrative than traditional commodities and hopes to source 2,500 acres of it next year. But that won't be without its challenges.
No matter what the profit potential, we have never grown hemp in the valley in anyone's memory. So nobody knows how to grow hemp. We don't have herbicides, insecticides, or fungicides labeled for hemp anywhere in the United States. We don't know anything about the varieties to grow. So there is such little knowledge about how to do this that we're starting out very much in a beginning stage.
Bobby Clark is an extension agent in Shenandoah County. He can only recall a few times during his 30-year career working with farmers in Virginia and North Carolina when a brand new product like hemp has come along, potentially offering brand new opportunity.
Canola, rabbits, ostrich production, sunflowers for sunflower oil. It's happened a few times, but this is an extremely rare thing.
And their track record isn't great.
The sunflower thing never got off the ground. Rabbits never got off the ground. Ostriches kind of came and went. And canola did not work out in the Virginias or Carolinas the way they wanted it to.
The challenge for farmers is one of risk versus reward. Despite the successful pilot program experiences of farmers like Rhodes, all the unknowns about growing hemp here make it risky, and therefore not for everyone. The Virginia Hemp Company, though, is bullish about hemp's long-term prospects in the Shenandoah Valley. Here's Grant again.
We think the financial opportunities and the almost unlimited growth of hemp as an industrial product will get us there.
How's everybody doing? I know there's been a lot of presentations. You probably have a lot of burning questions.
Last week, he spoke about his plans at a meeting in Mount Jackson, hoping to recruit farmers to the cause. Sam Stevens, one of the dozens who attended, is taking a wait-and-see approach.
I would be interested in trying this, but they want to do 30 acres, and I'm not quite ready to do that much at one time at the beginning. There's too much risk, too much ground to tie up doing it all at one shot, and I would just like to see a little more done first.
Rhodes, who also spoke at the meeting, thinks it'll all work out eventually.
I believe the crop has a great future. It had a great past here in the valley. It was some of the finest hemp grown in the world. I think this will add another crop with the potential to make some pretty good money.
It's too early to know yet if things will turn out that way. But at very least, Rhodes says, it's exciting to try something new.
There are a few times in your life you can be at the beginning of an industry. You won't always make money early, but at least you learn, and it's been a lot of fun.
For WMRA News, I'm Andrew Jenner.
You'll learn more about that story through hyperlinks that we've posted at WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. That is the podcast for today. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your Wednesday.